Welcome Inside Appalachia. I'm Zach Harold. We put a call out on social media recently asking men to describe what it was like to become dads. Today we'll hear their stories. From the first moment their kid was born.
I got to see her open her eyes for the first time, and I was by myself in a hospital room, and she looked up at me, and I really thought, oh gosh, this is the start of something big.
To what it's like helping raise a baby during the pandemic.
I got to bond with him like I've never bonded with anybody.
And we'll hear from a foster dad who just adopted his daughter. Spoiler alert, that dad is me. I'll tell y'all that story later on in the show. That and more this week Inside Appalachia. Welcome Inside Appalachia. I'm Zach Harold. Last year, we did an episode about mothers and breastfeeding and the challenges some moms face when they return to work. That episode, which won a regional Murrow Award for Best Podcast, is on our website. Check it out, wvpublic.org. Today, in honor of Father's Day, we're going to turn our attention to the other half of the parenthood equation. Because while moms are amazing, we don't often hear as much about the powerful bonds that dads form with their children.
I was really the first one to hold her, other than medical professionals.
This is first-time dad Mark Davis talking about the birth of his daughter Olympia. 2 years ago, his wife had to have an emergency C-section.
So I got to hold her. My wife was recovering, and I got to see her open her eyes for the first time. And I was by myself in a hospital room, and she looked up at me, and I really thought, oh gosh, this is the start of something big. My daughter's looking at me and, oh, what adventures we'll have in a way. I'm thinking about, you know, just that's the moment it started. That was the spark.
Did you know that a man's brain is rewired when he holds his newborn baby just after birth? True fact. Scientists have found that after just 30 minutes of holding his newborn in his arms, a dad's brain gets flooded with dopamine and oxytocin, which is sometimes referred to as the love hormone. In just a few short moments, his brain chemistry has changed forever. Thomas Berger remembers when that happened to him. Here he is telling his daughter about the day she was born.
I remember the first time I held you. And I can remember this day. I saw your eye. I saw your eyes. And I didn't want to scare you. In fact, I thought, you know, it's a good thing that babies can't bring everything into focus because, I mean, it's so different out here than it is in the womb. But I remember saying, I hope you are never afraid when I'm around. Anyway, I do remember that. But it was your birth was a big moment in our lives.
Berger recorded that when he sat down with his daughter, Renee Freimeyer, inside a silver StoryCorps recording bus. It was parked outside the Clay Center in Charleston, West Virginia, back in 2018. Berger told her what it was like to do something kind of uncommon for a dad back in the 1970s.
I took a year off to be a full-time father, an at-home dad, from the time you were 1.5 to 2.5. And lots of good times during those years. Your mom was teaching school. We had moved to Milford, Delaware, so she could teach school and support us while we did this so-called experiment.
So at the time, this was 1970?
78, 79.
And there weren't a lot of full-time stay-at-home dads
there
at that
weren't.
Time.
Well, not at all in the circle. We were always active in church, in the United Methodist Church, and we joined a church there. And I remember taking you to a Bible study. And there were women with their kids around the circle, and here's me with you. And we also often used to joke when people would ask me, what are you doing? And I said, I'm a full-time at-home father. And people couldn't quite understand that. I often joked that they said, okay, what are you really doing here? Do you have some kind of terminal illness and you're just kind of waiting? What are you doing here? Nobody just stays home. Well, I learned later there are lots of fathers who are out of work, they're taking care of their kids at home. There are lots of circumstances where many men, fathers, would stay at home to take care of their children. I certainly wasn't a pioneer or the only one. But I wanted to experience fatherhood I wanted to show your mom that I was committed to raising you. It wasn't just her job. And it was a real blessing. But I remember I had a bike and we had a little baby carrier in the back. Not baby, toddler carrier. It was a seat and we buckled you in. It's not like today where everything's surrounded you and you're wearing a hard hat and everything else. The only thing you had on your head was a little wool woven beanie, I think, no matter where we went. But we would go that place. We'd go grocery shopping. And the story that's told about you is after groceries, I had baskets, wire baskets on the back there, just below your feet, where I put the groceries on the way home. And we were pedaling through the parking lot, and a couple of little old ladies in a car rode by and said, "Look, look, look, look." I said, "What?" And I turned around, and you had gotten the egg carton of eggs and had opened it and just watched them roll out onto the pavement. They flop, flop, flop. There were the eggs on the pavement. Anyway, one time, you know, here's my parenting. We were not free-range parents, you know, where you just let them do whatever they want, but we were natural consequences. There was a book, I think, Children the Challenge. And the idea was natural consequences. And if those consequences would hurt you, you know, you would get hurt. Well, we'd have to come up with another consequence that would replace that. You weren't going to be hurt. So you and I took a little walk down to the local pond that was not far from the apartment there. And I told you that that's steep there. You might roll in, you know, you could roll into the pond. Well, you wanted to see the pond up close. So you kind of toddled over there. And sure enough, head first, right into this fishy, dirty old pond. Well, I picked you up. I don't remember if you cried or not, but I picked you up and hurried back to the apartment. Your mom was right by the door sitting at her desk grading papers or doing some teacher thing. And she said, "Ooh, what's that smell?" I said, "That's fish. Your daughter fell in the pond." "What?" Anyway, we got you cleaned up and we moved on. We had a wonderful year, I thought. I don't know if you were just a year and a half, too. You probably have no memories.
I have a few. I think, you know, it's hard to know if your memories are your memories or if it's from a picture you saw. But yeah. I remember making pancakes, standing on a chair, making pancakes, or flying kites.
Oh, that was an interesting time. I remember one time flying a kite. Finally got the kite up, and we were just in the middle of toilet training you. And we came, all of a sudden, you had to go to the bathroom. You weren't in diapers anymore. "And Daddy, I've got to go pee. And it's 50 feet in the air. The kite is 50 feet. I was rolling like this. Daddy!" Finally, I just let the kite go, and we went upstairs so you could take care of your business.
Berger was a stay-at-home dad during the 1970s. Only 2% of fathers back then stayed home with the kids. Berger says people were often confused when he told them he was a stay-at-home dad. Have society's views changed? Well, sort of. 40 years later, the number of stay-at-home dads has climbed to 4%. And a Pew Research Center survey from 2013 found that 8% of people in the U.S. said children are better off if their dad is home and doesn't work. More than half think their kids are better off if mom stays home. I wonder if those opinions will change given the amount of time many dads have been spending at home during the pandemic. There hasn't been a lot of research yet into how the pandemic has affected dads' roles at home, but anecdotally, we've heard several fathers say the pandemic has given them something few parents in our country get, time to bond with their kids. Hanny Saad became a dad 3 months ago.
This pandemic is, it's been horrible, you know, people died from it, a lot of people affected from it, it just turned our lives upside down, but, you know, from perspective, right side, it afforded me ability to spend time with my daughter and time to help my wife in raising her.
Saad says the extra time with his new daughter has allowed him to understand her better, to learn how to hold her, rock her to sleep, how to hear different kinds of cries and know what they mean. That is 2-month-old Kai, with his dad, Chuck Klein, who works here at West Virginia Public Broadcasting as video producer. Kai's mom, by the way, is Glennis Board, our assistant news director. She gave birth to Kai at their home in Wheeling, West Virginia, back in March. This is Chuck's third kid, But he says this time, fatherhood is really different. He shared his story. So did Joe Buckland, who lives in Mount Pleasant, Pennsylvania. Before the pandemic, Joe worked in the restaurant industry, but was furloughed.
Where it all really started for me was we started hearing of a pandemic on the news right at the beginning of March. On March 13th, the governor of West Virginia basically said, hey, we're closing schools down. That went into effect on the 16th. And by Governor Jim Justice put a stay-at-home order for the state of West Virginia, shelter in place. And it's like, holy crap, I'm about to have a baby. What kind of world am I about to bring my kid into?
My daughter Olivia was born on February 19th, right before the pandemic started. It kind of changed things. I lost my job, much like most of the country, it seems, on March 16th. And I became a full-time stay-at-home father. I like to call myself a house dad. Or a house spouse, trying to be clever about it. I bonded with my kid the minute she was born. Actually, that's not entirely true. It took me a couple of days because I remember now I was in shock. My fiance was in labor for 72 hours. And when Olivia was finally born, it was such a monumental moment. I cried, of course, but I knew that everything had changed in a good way. I knew that my life would never be the same, but I was so excited. I was anxious. I was terrified, to be honest.
There was a lot of anxiety for me. Over what if I get it? What if I struggle with it? What if I don't survive it? What if my baby gets it? What if my children get it? You know, I think everybody went through these emotions. And so I was struggling with it a little bit. And on March 28th, I didn't sleep very well at all. I was up probably at 3 a.m. and I was sitting downstairs. Just fiddling through a phone or something, just basically struggling a little bit, trying to get a grasp on this unwinding of our normal society, our normal way of life. And my wife, Glennis, texted me from upstairs and said, hey, what you doing? I said, just basically trying to focus myself. And, trying to calm myself down, and she replied with, I really need you to be calm because Kai is coming today. We were not going to the hospital. We had several reasons for that. She wanted to try to do it at home, and then with this pandemic, there was no way we were going to go to the hospital unless we absolutely had a super emergency going down. We had a plan. We didn't do any of it, but that's pretty much the way birth goes, I guess. I'm running around with masks and gloves on and bottles of bleach and spray bottles of hand sanitizers. And, you know, like I was changing some sheets on the main bed. And all of a sudden, in one big bellow of a scream, I heard the baby cry. Nature just was like, no, we're just going to do it right here on the floor.
Oh, no. Oh, no, yeah.
And perfect timing because this is where you come into the story. Yeah, you. Yep. So then you were born. I know. It was a weird day, wasn't it? Born at 1 o'clock.
My daughter's only now 3 months old, so there really wasn't a lot of things that I had to do with her. You know, babies that age, you feed them, you keep them clean, you hold them, when they cry, and you make sure they get enough sleep, and, you know, that's pretty much it. Now we're doing tummy time, which is kind of cool. Put her on her belly, and she's got to kind of push herself up and look around. You see Mr. Fox? You see Mr. Fox? Yeah. It's really neat to watch this little girl grow up into a person.
See you, Daddy.
My fiance is the breadwinner in the family. She works during the day, and the plan originally was for me to work in the evening, which when things go open up and get back to normal, that's still going to be the plan, is for me to be at home during the day and work at night. Hopefully we can make that work. Hopefully the restaurant industry will pick back up. My mom stayed with us for a week and helped us really get into a groove of changing diapers and feeding and giving baths and things like that. And then when she left, it was just the two of us.
I am home. I'm not going out anywhere. I'm not working on the road. I'm home. And I don't know, I just got to bond with him. I got to bond with him like I've never bonded with anybody. He's just this brand new, innocent little spirit with these big eyes. And he looked right at me. And he just hold on to you, hold on to your finger, make the cute little coon noises. And just, you know, he needed you to do everything for him. But instead of having any interruptions from the world, it was just him. And that's something I can't articulate. I can't articulate it, I don't think. Other than it was an absolutely beautiful bonding time that I will never forget in my whole life.
I fully plan on being as involved as I can in my daughter's life. You know, take her to dance or to karate or baseball or, you know, whatever sport she wants to play. If she wants to play sports, if she wants to be in the band, you know, I want to be there. I want to be involved. It's so fun to watch this part of me grow into a little person and to see her experience the world, to experience the world with her through her eyes. At the same time, you know, it is kind of scary to see the world through her eyes because things are looking uncertain. You know, right now we've got the riots going on over the murder of George Floyd. I worry about the kind of world that my daughter's going to be growing up in. But the only thing I can do right now is have hope, and I can try and teach her the right ways of things.
That was Joe Buckland up in Mount Pleasant, Pennsylvania, and Chuck Klein of Wheeling, West Virginia. They self-recorded their experiences about becoming new dads during the pandemic. Toward the end of that story, Joe mentioned George Floyd. He was killed last month by a Minneapolis police officer who kept his knee on Floyd's neck for 8 minutes and 46 seconds. Floyd was a dad himself. His 6-year-old daughter and her mother spoke to Good Morning America.
What do you want people to know?
Kind of that I miss him.
What was your dad like?
He played with me.
She didn't have to play with nobody else because daddy was going to play with her all day long. I mean, that was his baby. He loved his little girl.
And Floyd's adult son recently addressed a crowd at the place where his father was killed.
Trying to get justice for my father. No man or woman should be without their fathers. And we want justice for what's going on right now.
His son is right. No one should be without their father, and especially not like this. We'll be keeping the Floyd family in our thoughts. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Inside Appalachia. I'm Zach Harold. We'll be right back.
Support for Inside Appalachia is provided by Concord University in Athens, West Virginia. With career-focused liberal arts education in more than 80 degrees and programs to pursue various career options, not just a single job. More at concord.edu.
It's a shame it took a pandemic and being laid off for many dads to get to spend more time with their kids. Here in the United States, paid parental leave is just not a reality for the majority of men. 9 out of 10 dads in our country take some time off work when their baby is born, according to the Department of Labor. But most of that is unpaid. Beginning this October, 2 million federal workers will get up to 12 weeks of paid parental leave. Earlier this year, President Trump signed into law the Federal Employee Paid Leave Act, which allows paid time off for federal employees who are new parents. That includes foster and adoptive parents, too. But the law doesn't apply to workers in the private sector, of course, and it's still far less time off work than what parents get in many other countries. We asked dads in West Virginia about taking time off work just after their babies were born. Here's what they had to say.
I was surprised to find out I only got 5 days of leave.
I was able to take just barely 2 weeks off. I wanted to take more, but my employer absolutely refused it.
Probably the best thing about this for me has been paid paternity leave, which unfortunately is something that people in the United States do not get a whole lot of. It's very rare that people get paid paternity leave at all. And I was able to get 12 weeks of paid paternity leave, not doing any work, only spending time with my newborn daughter and my wife. And this is something that just should not be unique. And honestly, 12 weeks is not enough.
I guess not being a father before, I hadn't ever thought about it. And then when it came down to it, I would have loved more leave. In fact, I think, you know, we worked with what we had, but I tried to support her as much as I could when I was working, when I went back to work, even if it was just during my lunchtime, I could come home and allow my wife to grab a shower quick or, just give her a break. So that was something that we did try to work on, and I just tried to help her as much as I could.
I did actually not go into work when I was supposed to one day because my wife and my newborn child still needed me. And I faced disciplinary action for that, which I believe is horrible. You know, my wife had a difficult birth, and she wasn't able to get around very well. You know, 2 weeks with a newborn for new parents is just not enough for healing or bonding even. You know, I wanted to be there with my son every waking minute. I still do to this day. I hate that I have to work, but you got to pay the bills. But I just wish that employers would value the bonding time that fathers need and want with their children.
This is the most important thing you can do as a human, is bring another person into the world. And those first weeks, those first months, those first few years are the most important time for, you know, spending time and bonding with your child. And the fact that, you know, we don't have a guarantee that a parent can do that, because it's a tragedy that so many fathers out there just have to go right back to work.
That was Gary DeLuke of Morgantown, Jeremy Barnes of Farmington, and Mark Davis, who lives in Charleston, all in West Virginia. If you're a parent, did you get paid paternity leave? How long did it last? We'd love to keep this conversation going. You can tweet us at @InAppalachia, and my Twitter handle is @ZachHarold. As journalists, we're taught to keep our personal lives separate from our reporting. But for this episode, we decided to try something a little different. Several of us who produced this show decided to share our own stories about fatherhood and our dads.
Ended up that she was a little turned and wasn't going to come out the natural way and had to be delivered by forceps.
That's Andrew Todd. He's the father of Roxy Todd, our producer.
So all that went really fast. I was kind of struggling to think everything would be okay. And then suddenly it was. It was beautiful. She was a big, healthy baby.
Andrew's remembering a night 37 years ago when Roxy was born. Like most birth stories, nothing went as planned. Her parents tried to have her at home, but Roxy's mom had to be taken to a local hospital. Then their baby girl needed an operation. Mr. Todd picks up the story from here.
So as it turned out, I was actually an ambulance driver myself and had worked for the transport team in the nursery at Vanderbilt where she would be going. And I drove for them for several years. And when our doctor called up there to arrange a transport to Vanderbilt, we found out that the transport van was at the opposite end of the state bringing in another baby. So instead of waiting, I don't know how they did this back then, but the doctors at Vanderbilt decided that it would be okay if I brought the baby. So they gave permission for me to bring Roxy, and it was about a two-hour drive up to Vanderbilt. I had our best friends, Knox and Lynette, drive their car. They happened to be visiting, and they drove, sat in the front seat, and there at the hospital in Columbia where Roxy was born, we bundled her up very nicely, and she was quiet, sleeping, very comfortable, and I held her in the back seat during the trip, just kind of still mind blown about the whole thing, but a concerned but also very comfortable because I was getting to hold her. So as we were driving, being the middle of the night, maybe 1 or 2 a.m., I looked out the window at one point and there was just farmland along the interstate, and looked up and there was this full moon in eclipse. And I wasn't surprised at all because this was such a monumental night, magical night. And I looked at it and said, "Knox, look out the window." So he looked out and said, "Oh my gosh, it really is. It's a total eclipse of the moon." So after we acknowledged the magic of that, we continued, and Roxy stayed quiet the whole time. I just remember snuggling with her, not too much else.
3 in the morning, lay my hand over your heart just to know you were safe in your sleep. When you started walking, I fight back the urge to stay right there beside you, keep you on your feet. Being your daddy comes natural. The roses just know how to grow. It's easy to see that you'll get where you're going, but the hard part is letting you go. The hard part is letting you go.
Next, we're going to explore what it means to be a father as your children get older. Our associate producer, Eric Douglas, first became a dad 19 years ago. Now he has 2 daughters and a stepdaughter. Over the years, he's noticed how his role as a father has changed and how his relationship with his daughters has evolved.
I don't know that I ever thought about being a father. I guess I always assumed I would be one someday, but I never spent any time thinking about what it would be like before it happened. In hindsight, it probably wouldn't have mattered. Fatherhood isn't something you can prepare yourself for. It's not like there's an owner's manual for kids. All parents are pretty much winging it, whether they admit it or not.
It's definitely hard being like a first-time father. You don't know how to do some things. So, it's always a learning curve whenever you become a parent anyways.
That's my 19-year-old daughter, Ashlyn. My younger daughter is Jameson. She's 18. I loved watching them grow up. I was a pretty involved dad, and by that I mean feeding, changing diapers, reading to them at bedtime, and even singing a little lullaby for them each night. I took them to museums and aquariums and zoos. I cheered them on when they got into model rockets. Now that the girls are older, I don't get to spend as much time with them. That's perfectly normal, and I understand. But it is an odd feeling as you find out your little girls don't need you nearly as much. I begin to wonder what sort of a job I did as a dad. How I shaped them into the women they have become. Did I do enough for them? Any parent who says they don't have doubts is lying or misguided. Jameson just had her wisdom teeth removed and was in no mood to talk. But I asked Ashlyn about her ideal father.
I look for a lot of love in family and friends, so that's what my ideal father would be like, is if he would give me a lot of love and just a lot of care and thoughtfulness, which you do. So thank you.
Ultimately, what Ashlyn just said sums it up. It's not about the latest toy or expensive fancy gifts at Christmas that your kids won't even remember by next year. It's about love, and it's about time. I remember sitting on the floor with them, eating chips off of the mini tramp we brought into the living room, or flying kites at the beach. I remember Ashlyn having bad dreams and crawling into my lap to feel safe. I asked Ashlyn about some of her favorite memories growing up. Her answer surprised me a bit. I traveled frequently when she was young, both in the U.S. and internationally. I wondered if she might resent that, since it was time away.
We have like 100 shirts from all the places you visited and the snow globes and everything. I think that's probably my favorite, is the stuff that you would give us from the trips, and you'd tell us all the stories and the photos you took from all the places you went.
Why is that special to you?
I mean, I couldn't go, so in a way, you just brought back some history or some teaching lessons for me to like experience at least secondhand what's going on around the world and where you went, and just maybe it kind of like wanted me to go places and wanted me to explore like you did.
None of those gifts I brought back were expensive, but they told her that I was thinking of her while I was on the road. It makes me really happy that it made her interested in the world. I always made it a point to show them photos and tell them stories about where I had been and what I saw. On several occasions, they got to meet friends from other countries. There was a divorce in there, too. It was tough on everyone. I remember being really worried about not being able to read to my girls any longer and put them to bed. That really bothered me. A few years later, I remarried, and I became a stepfather. I think of her as a bonus daughter. Her name is Caitlin Jordan, and I asked her the same question about fatherhood.
The easiest answer is just stereotypes, you know? To hear the magic words that your dad's proud of you and teach you car stuff and camping and man stuff, you know? Well, in your case, cooking. No, I really enjoy that.
She was 18 when I came into her life 8 years ago. So Caitlin was well on her way to becoming the woman she is now. We have spent lots of time talking about life and growing up and work and whatever else just came up. I think we have a good relationship. I really do just think of her as one of my own. Caitlin's father passed away recently. She didn't have a lot of contact with him growing up, but they were able to reconnect in the last few years. I have told her several times that I was glad she had the chance to get to know him. In light of that, I asked her for her realistic answer about what a father is.
Someone to share stories with and experiences and just to learn from each other. I feel like I've done that with you and my father. And I don't know about you, but I feel like my dad even learned some things from me.
For some, there is an ideal of what a perfect father is. I've never met one. I think the answer is being there. Just listening and taking the time. My first instinct is to try to fix things. But sometimes it is important to just be an ear. I still miss seeing them as much, but all three of them know if they need me, all they have to do is call. I think the biggest lesson I've learned is that even with all the mistakes any parent would make, I did okay. My girls have grown up into young women I am proud of. I asked Ashlyn again what she thought about fatherhood.
They take time to understand. That's really all I could ever ask for. Someone just to understand.
That was Ashlyn Douglas speaking with her father, our associate producer, Eric Douglas. So far today, we've heard stories from dads about stages in their kids' lives, from birth to raising an older child. Now we turn our focus to a more difficult part of the father-child relationship, losing your dad. Reporter Molly Bourne originally sat down to write a story about missing her dad around the holidays, but she realized that grief doesn't follow a set schedule. We're going to listen back to a story we originally aired last December. Here's Molly.
About 2 years ago, in early January, I recorded this totally boring thing that's happened dozens of times. My dad coming to get me at the bottom of my parents' snowy driveway, because my car couldn't make it up the hill. It was a pretty treacherous climb, even for his pickup. But it was not especially memorable or interesting. Still, I felt compelled to capture it.
Looky there.
Wow. Face down.
I didn't know if we'd do it or not.
These trees look pretty.
Yeah, they do, don't they? Let's see, I think you know this.
Good job.
My dad died that September, 1 week after he was diagnosed with terminal cancer. In the summer, he had been outside like always, chopping wood and mowing grass. Soon he couldn't talk or use the bathroom by himself. I fed him Ensure. He looked like a skeleton. Decades worth of aging happened in a matter of days. I recently found the notes I took at the time. I barely remember scribbling them all down. July 2018, started feeling bad. August 12th, asked me to feel hard place on his tummy. August 15th, went to the doctor. August 23rd, got biopsy and CAT scan. August 30th, got diagnosis. Cancer in the liver, moved to the lungs, stage 4. As he declined further, we were in the car, at my urging, my mom, dad, and me, taking him to the ER. It was one of the last times we were all together as a family, and something told me to turn on a recorder. Not to preserve a memory of him, but to try to capture the sounds around me. It was all happening so fast, I worried I couldn't rely on my own memory to piece together the details. And I was working in public radio, so used to taking out my recorder.
Tuesday?
It's...
What's the date?
Tuesday, September 4th.
In the car, Dad and I split a cigarette.
After he lied to you, he can't ask you to tell me you get one of you yet.
Mm-hmm.
It's...
I'll hit one or back.
Yeah, I want to hit. Or a drag. Can I borrow it?
You want quick?
Whenever you have another.
Mom was trying to keep it together.
That grass in the middle, Dawn. I tell you, this summer's grass has been hard to keep track of. Look over there, it's never looked like that.
In the face of loss, we're left to attach significance to the things that seemed ordinary before. Like this recording. Like the snow video. It is my way of grieving. Of healing. 2 days later, he was gone. The loss was swift. There wasn't even time to seriously consider options for treatment. There was talk of chemo, but everyone knew it was too late. The cancer doctor left for vacation without leaving a number to call. Dad was 67. I don't know what I thought grief would or should look like. My grandmother's was easy to identify. The intensification of pain and expressions of sadness on birthdays and anniversaries, and an inability to return to my parents' home. But mine was different. I didn't cry at his funeral. I've never been to his grave and don't care to go. I have a glass of good bourbon on his birthday and listen to the songs I played at his bedside before he died. I well up when the Navy March song comes on, even though I hardly know what my dad did during his service. I post his picture on Instagram when I think I'm supposed to, but I don't feel especially sad when I thought I would or should. My dad and I were never close. He held me at a distance his whole life, and we struggled to understand each other or to have real conversations. I'd go weeks without talking to him, but his death brought on an intimacy I didn't expect. In the weeks before he died, I took charge. I became his advocate. He needed me like I wanted him to need me his whole life. Death changed our relationship. A friend and I discussed this recently, how the things that drove us nuts about our late parents seemed forgivable now, even endearing. My dad had a $45 bill with Trump's face on it that used to incense me. I found it again recently, and I laughed. I talk about my dad and his death more than I ever did when he was alive. I talk about him to strangers, to friends. I'm less critical of his shortcomings. And it's easy for me to talk about him in conversations. Let me tell you about this hillbilly contraption my dad made to scoop up ladybugs off the ceiling. A pop bottle with the bottom cut off, taped to a paint stirrer handle. And now I surround myself with his belongings. His gun collection meant nothing to me until we were clearing it out. I gave his pistol to a dear friend, a collector himself. I gave his dresser to another friend. These things have brought my dad into my friends' lives, too, and bonded them to me more securely. And on my bed is the buffalo plaid blanket we earned from carefully cutting out Marlboro Miles from hundreds of cartons of cigarettes. Those precious, ordinary things that are part of my home now prove that nothing is the same and promise that it's all right that nothing's the same. For Inside Appalachia, I'm Molly Bourne.
It's a god-awful small affair to the girl with the mousy hair. But her mommy.
This is one of Molly's dad's favorite songs, Life on Mars by David Bowie. She's told her to go,
but her friend is nowhere to be seen. Now she walks through her sunken dream to the seat with the clearest view. And she's hooked to the silver screen. But the film is a saddening bore, for she's lived it 10 times or more. She could spit in the eyes of fools if they ask her to focus on sailors fighting in the dance hall.
Remember what our associate producer Eric Douglas said earlier about how he always just assumed he'd become a father but never really considered the specifics? I was the same way. I thought my future would someday include ultrasounds and nursery decorations. My wife Whitney had other ideas. She suggested that instead of going the traditional biological route, we should become foster parents. After some long conversations, she had me on board too. So we began 10 weeks of classes, where we learned all the rules and got advice on how to deal with issues kids in foster care might experience. We started turning our home office into a kid's room, too. This was tricky since we didn't know how many kids we'd be getting, what their genders would be, or how old they'd be. So we got a set of bunk beds, some gender-neutral bedding, a few toys, and figured we'd sort the rest out later. After that, we had someone out to our house to do a home inspection. And just like that, the day after Easter 2019, our home was open, as they say in the foster care world. By that Wednesday, we got a call to see if we'd take a 5-year-old girl. By Friday night, Whitney and I were parents. It was a strange thing to have a kid in the house at first. It's a little bit like getting a roommate who can't cook her own meals or do her own laundry or groom herself without prompting. But somehow, we figured out how to take care of her, and she seemed to enjoy living with us. Earlier in the hour, we heard Mark Davis talk about how he felt when he held his newborn daughter in his arms, that biological response that reprograms a man's brain. I didn't get that. Certainly, I felt a deep responsibility to take care of this little girl, and I liked spending time with her, but there was no spark. For me, fatherly love came like a slow rising tide. I was developing a bond, I just didn't notice it as it was happening. And then I looked at her one day. I think I was following her up a trail in Kanawha State Forest. And I realized that I felt a new kind of love in my heart, one that wasn't ever going to go away. Eventually, it became clear our girl wasn't going away either. It's a complicated thing, adopting a foster child. A lot of bonds have been broken in their lives for them to become eligible for adoption. The first priority of foster care is always to reconnect kids with their biological families, but if that fails, the goal is to find a safe, loving, forever home for these kids. A few months after our little girl came to live with us, our foster care agency asked if we'd be willing to adopt her. This time, Whitney and I didn't even have to talk about it. The answer was, without hesitation, yes. So we began months of paperwork and anxious waiting. Until you get your day in court, it feels like a trap door can open at any moment and she'll be gone. We'd had that experience before. About 6 months after welcoming our first foster daughter, a second little girl came to live in her home. Then one day Whitney called me at work. DHHR had decided to move her to a biological family member who would pick her up from school that day. She lived with us for 2 weeks. I'd helped her with her homework. I'd fixed her breakfast. I'd hugged her goodnight. She was becoming part of our family. Now, I wouldn't even get to say goodbye. What if that happened with this little girl, too? Luckily, I didn't have to find out. Courtrooms are still closed because of the ongoing coronavirus pandemic. But last Thursday, we got our day in court via Skype. That morning, I sat her on the couch and asked her a few questions.
I'm excited.
What are you excited about? What does adoption mean?
I'm gonna say who. You're not gonna be. I'm not gonna be in foster care anymore. I'm gonna stay with the person that I was in foster care all the time. I love you.
I'm glad you're gonna be our little girl forever and ever.
Me too.
As the hour approached, we all got dressed up. Whitney had bought them special dresses for the occasion, and I put on a tie for the first time in 3 months. Then I propped my laptop on the coffee table and logged on. There was the judge and the court reporter, our lawyer, and the adoption specialist from NECO, our foster care agency. The whole thing took about 15 minutes. Our lawyer asked us a few simple questions: where we live, what's our wedding date, and whether we believe this adoption was in the best interest of our family. And then it happened.
DHHR is consenting to this adoption, that the child doesn't own any real personal property of any substantial value, that the petitioners are 15 years older than the said child, child not an Indian child as defined by the U.S. Code. Congratulations, it's a girl.
Yay! Yay. Congratulations. Yeah. Now you three squeeze together. This is
okay.
Maybe when the courtroom opens again, we'll get the official shot, but this is the closest we got.
Right.
One, two, three.
And through it all, our girl had been motionless and expressionless. I worried what was going through her mind. But once it was over, she said she didn't want to speak up because she didn't know any of those people on the screen. Fair enough, kid. I think it was a strange experience for all of us. The rest of the day was a big party. The grandparents all came over and stayed 6 feet apart. But we ate hot dogs and hamburgers and sheet cake. Our girl devoured about 2 dozen chocolate-covered strawberries one of Whitney's aunts made. And while we usually try to watch her sweets intake, we told her all bets were off that day. After all, we missed out on 5 years of her life. We've got a lot of celebrating to catch up on.
I hope you find something to love, something to do when you feel like giving up. A song to sing, or a tale to tell, something to love, it'll serve you well. Something to love, it'll serve you well.
Till next time, thanks for joining me as we journey throughout Appalachia. Our theme music is by Matt Jackford. Other music this week was by Jason Isbell, Spencer Elliott, David Bowie, Johnny Cash, Dinosaur Burps, and Blue Dot Sessions. Roxy Todd is our producer. Eric Douglas is our associate producer. Our executive producer is Glennis Board. She also edited our show this week. Our audio mixer is Patrick Stevens. Molly Bourne and Xander Alloy also helped produce this episode. You can find us on Twitter at NAppalachia. You can find me on Twitter at Zach Harold. That's Zach with a CK and Harold with an A and an O. You can also send us an email to insideappalachia@wvpublic.org. Visit wvpublic.org/insideappalachia to sign up for the Inside Appalachia newsletter. There you can subscribe or download all of our stories, or look for the Inside Appalachia podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Inside Appalachia is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for Inside Appalachia is provided by Concord University in Athens, West Virginia. With career-focused liberal arts education in more than 80 degrees and programs to pursue various career options, not just a single job. More at concord.edu.
It's not time to make a change. Just relax and take it easy. You're still young, that's your fault. There's so much you have to know. Find a girl, settle down. If you want, you can marry. Look at me, I am old, but I'm happy. I was once like you are now.